Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hey, good day to you. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to a Monday installment of Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. We always enjoy the opportunity to get together and talk about a variety of issues that catch our attention, and we want to provide a biblical perspective as much as we can to help connect faith to life. Ted Ross at the controls, as always. Carissa's at the phones, and you're welcome to interact with us today anytime at 877-93-FAITH. So we're going to talk a little bit about Christmas films. Ted, always seems like this time of year, a lot of new movies coming out. So
yeah, it's kind of exciting. I mean, there's some good ones and some probably duds as well. Yeah. But I think over the weekend, the new Exodus movie swept the box office.
Yeah. So
curious to see what that's like.
Kind of flooded in, sort of like the Red Sea coming back together again. That sort of thing.
Right.
So well, we have a great guest today. And if you, by the way, if you're new to Faith Radio, we want to just say that you can find out a little bit about us on our website at myfaithradio.com. We also have a welcome packet there. So if you'd like to request your packet, it'll just give you a little more information about us and other encouraging content just to say, hey, welcome. And if you have been with us for any length of time, you know that we've had opportunity to chat with Drew Trotter from time to time as we talk films. Drew is executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers, and for 20-plus years was executive director and president of the Center for Christian Study in Charlottesville, Virginia. And he's written on film and popular culture for three dozen years or so, and publications like Books and Culture and Christianity Today and Critique. And he's also a theologian. He's written in the field of biblical study as well. And he's presented a seminar called Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly, helping lay people and students in churches, colleges, and secular university environments understand the powerful medium and how we can maybe make some connections. And we'll maybe talk a little bit about that as well. Are there opportunities to have some spiritual discussions, particularly maybe with the new movie, Ted, you just mentioned, Exodus, Gods and Kings? Drew, welcome. First of all, it's great to have you back on Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. It's good to be here, although your mention of me writing on movies for three dozen years makes me wonder if I should just die away.
I don't know. Would 30 years have sounded better if I just seen you could, you know? So.
I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know. It's true.
well, glad that you're still sitting upright and taking nourishment, and we're going to have a good conversation today. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, this year we've seen a couple of Bible-themed movies. It was Noah earlier this year, and now Exodus, Gods and Kings. I guess maybe, first of all, is it too much that we'd expect that a story would accurately reflect the biblical narrative? And do we just sort of sit back and enjoy it for what it is?
It's a great question. The answer does have to do with who the we is. Hmm. Christians can't really expect non-Christians to take really dramatic and interesting material and follow it slavishly or try to picture it such that it engenders belief or whatever. You just couldn't expect that. So Darren Aronofsky, being Jewish and pretty secular Jew, taking Noah, he just enjoyed taking a Gnostic bent on it and created some really interesting stuff. And I really enjoyed the movie, but I didn't for a minute expect it to be connected to Genesis. And the same thing is true of Ridley Scott. I don't know anything about his faith or lack thereof, but there's never been any public affirmation of it. He just seems to have wanted to take a very famous, cherished old movie, The Ten Commandments, and redo it in his own way. The difference between the two movies is that Noah, in the Old Testament, has really a very few verses. Exodus, on the other hand, has got 15 full chapters that it's trying to promote. And, of course, Exodus, the book, has many more than that. But the length of the film and what time period it's trying to portray has got a whole lot of material. And yet, from what I understand, and I must admit to not having seen the film yet either, though I'd love to have and plan to go soon, but everything I've read, he doesn't make any attempt really necessarily to follow the biblical material. As one reviewer put it, Moses, instead of having a staff, has got a sword in his hand. And he makes him into this battle commander, and apparently the focus is on the relationship between him and Ramses, and it's sort of a family theme. Ramses is all upset because his treasured son has died, and that's the tenth plague, of course. Rather than being upset that, you know, so many hundreds of people in Egypt died because all the firstborn sons died. So I don't know. I think it's important for Christians to understand that the Bible is a book that non-Christians read and are intrigued by as well. And its cultural impact, of course, can't even be measured. So it's not surprising filmmakers would go to it for material. It's also not surprising that if they're not believers, they don't have any agenda to make it look positive or look good. They just want to make a good story.
Sure. Well, along that line, if you know, because the world still has some intrigue about the Bible, can movies like this provide an entree to spiritual discussions? I mean, over the years, I know you've had at the Study Center in Charlottesville, I mean, you had kind of regular movie nights and things. Are movies still an effective way to maybe open up some conversations?
Oh, I think they are. And I think the direct telling of a Christian story or telling of a biblical story just obviously opens that door. You don't even have to kind of get around it by talking about themes that we might be interested in or whatever. I remember having great discussions, even though the movie was dated at the time I was having these discussions at the Study Center on Chariots of Fire, because you had a person actually standing against the King of England and against everything we would do if we wanted to up our social standing or improve our circumstances in society simply because of his faith. And it engendered a great discussion. At the same time, you can have a movie that doesn't even mention the word faith or God or whatever, but deals with interesting themes and that are sometimes Christian, and the conversation can be an interesting one. I remember one that we did on a movie called Lars and the Real Girl, which I've mentioned a lot, yeah, actually on this program, because it remains one of my favorite films, even though nobody saw it when it was in the box office. Yeah. But you should. It's got Ryan Gosling in it and Patricia Clarkson, and it's about a man who is mentally challenged who orders a life-size doll of a woman and then treats her as if she's his real girlfriend. And the community around him, it's a small town and everybody knows everybody, but the way they rally to try to help him discern reality from fantasy, and yet the way they learn from him, in that he treats this doll the way many of us should treat our spouses or our girlfriends or whatever, is just beautiful. And it's really, really an interesting movie in that regard. And it got us to serious questions about how we act as Christians.
We're talking today with Drew Trotter and talking movies today. By the way, you're welcome to join the conversation if you'd like to check in with us at 877-93-FAITH. Drew, there's one other or I guess a related area is that there are more maybe representations of Christianity coming in the movies, or at least characters who are sort of open about their faith, right? That's been maybe a little change from over the years, or maybe it used to be that way and it kind of went away for a while.
I'll tell you, it's been a remarkable year in that regard. What used to happen, Neil, is this. You would either have a character who finds some solace in the church or being in a church building. I think of The Sixth Sense, when the child sees dead people, of course, and he goes to the church to flee these dead people, and you know, that sort of thing. Or you would have, well, same director, actually. But M. Night Shyamalan did a movie called Signs, and the Christian character was a priest or was an ex-priest or some member of the clergy. And that was about it. You didn't have normal Christians doing normal things as Christians. But this year, you have in the war movie Fury, which didn't advertise the fact at all, you had Shia LaBeouf playing a pretty fundamentalist kind of Baptist Christian kind of guy, but who was really a wonderful character and who cared for other people and cared about the issues surrounding what they were having to do in war and cared for his fellow mates, you know, in the team there in the tank, and was always challenging the other guys to think about the gospel and yet not doing so in a nasty way, and did his job with excellence and really well. And that particular aspect of his life, and I won't do a spoiler, but if you go to the movie and see it, which I would very much recommend if you like war movies particularly, the way his faith impacts Brad Pitt, who is the leader of the tank, is really interesting and extraordinary. Then you've got another movie that's out right now, being touted for a lot of Academy nominations, perhaps because of the performance of Eddie Redmayne, the guy who plays Stephen Hawking, is a biopic called The Theory of Everything. And in that movie, Hawking is a very clear atheist, or at best agnostic, physicist who is a genius. And, of course, he was a real-life man and is. He still lives, I think. Yeah, that's correct anyway. But Cambridge physicist who discovered this string theory and a lot of important ideas in physics, who wanted to have a theory of everything. Well, he gets intrigued by a girl who is a Christian, and they marry, and that's the story, really, is their relationship. And while she doesn't, act in accordance with her faith every moment of the time in this movie, which none of us do in life, she certainly portrays a position in which she really sticks by her guns in her belief, and he is at least impressed with that, and that's an interesting take as well. So these guys are popping up, Christians are popping up and being called Christians and not being presented as if they're morons, or idiots in some way, and that's a very encouraging move, I think, in Hollywood, and I think it's due to a lot of hard work by a lot of Christians in Hollywood.
That they've lived it out day by day and showed normalcy, I guess, right? And
they've at least begun to have some characters. They're not the lead characters. Yeah. People don't come down the Sawdust Trail and become Christians or something in these movies, but at least filmmakers who have no particular Christian bent are introducing characters in their films who are realistic Christians and who are believable Christians. And that's encouraging and I think a good sign for the faith.
And we'll talk more about that in a moment and more. It might be a way that there is maybe some new influence in Hollywood in terms of what's going on in the world of films. We're talking movies today. We like to do it every once in a while. Drew Trotter, who is executive director of the Consortium of Christian Studies Centers and has written on film and pop culture for a number of years. And we are happy to have him with us today as we talk more about some of the films out here around Christmas time and give you some perspective on that. We'll touch on the conclusion to The Hunger Games and The Hobbit and a little bit about another one coming out Christmas Day we want to talk about that has, there's a faith story behind it. Whether it gets reviewed in the movie, that's another thing. We'll get to that and more. And you're welcome with your questions as well. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number, 877-933-2484. We'll continue in a minute.
Are you coming to the tree? A strong upper man, they say.
It's 19 past the hour, and we're talking films today, talking about what's happening at the box office these days with Drew Trotter, executive director of the Consortium of Christian Studies Centers. He was executive director and president of the Center for Christian Study in Charlottesville, Virginia for 22 years and has written on film and popular culture for more years than we need to talk about. He's also done a seminar called Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly, and we take the opportunity to talk with Drew whenever there's some kind of big season movies around. And you just played a little clip. That was from Mockingjay.
Yeah, right? That's one of the songs that the lead character Katniss sings, and it kind of rallies everybody to take up arms against the Capitol, I guess. Drew, you've seen that movie, I take it, right?
Yeah.
I have. I was a big fan of the books.
Okay. What did you think about it? It brings up the question, of course, it's the conclusion's in two parts now. So let's talk a little bit about that latest one and if that's a trend we're going to be seeing more of in Hollywood, because The Hobbit, of course, coming out too.
I think we will when they get hold of a book series like The Hunger Games that looks like it's got the potential for being really big blockbuster stuff. And you had three books in the Hunger Games series, and they knew that if the first one hit, the next two were going to be huge. Well, so they just made the third one into two, and so they had four movies for three books. And I think, and this, of course, comes originally from The Lord of the Rings, where Peter Jackson decided to film two of the movies at the same time, taking a huge chance that the films would be bad and you had two movies that you had to release. But, of course, they hit beyond all expectation, and they went big time on them. And then, of course, started planning to do The Hobbit and decided to do The Hobbit, which was a single-volume book and a rather slender novel at that. And then they've made three movies out of it. I have really found all of these to be just completely bloated, and it's unfortunate. They think that they're developing the characters better, but they're really just packing it out. And I think you've got to have the plot continue on a good pace, especially in an action adventure film like The Hunger Games is, and it's too bad. But that's what they're going to do because they're making money. And Hollywood, that is a major, major factor in Hollywood, of course, what can bring in the most bucks. And if they know they've got a franchise, they will milk it for all it's worth.
You know, I've read a review not too long ago about the Hunger Games, the latest one, and it kind of relates. I think we've had this conversation before, but that, you know, there are, it seems like an increased number of amount of violence in some of these, particularly PG films, I guess, that, and maybe as Christians, should we be a little more careful about, you know, we're careful about sexual content in movies, but it seems like violence maybe gets a pass. So what do you see going on in just in this kind of interest in more violence in the movies?
Well, I think that's probably true. I know that the increase in sex has been just amazing in the films. Whether you can get more bloody or more violent than we've had in the past is beyond me, because so many things have been being done for decades now, you know, decapitation and all sorts of things that are just ugly and grotesque, and they've always been very realistic. The special effects people have been able to do these sorts of things now for decades. But as you pointed out, what can happen is that because of the amount of this kind of thing in movies, we as a culture get more and more used to it, and therefore the ratings don't relate to it as strongly. And those of us who are Christians who are trying to do everything we can to watch our language, for instance, or to be very careful in terms of voyeurism and sexual temptation, or as you point out, violence, which, you know, in an angry sort of person, violent acts are not something they should be viewing. I don't think I'm going to go out and watch a Hunger Games and then just lose it and beat somebody in the head with a baseball bat or something. But at the same time, I think there are plenty of people who do have difficult personality traits that are not helped by that kind of work. And when you begin to get it into children, who can go to a PG movie and be 6 years old or 7 years old, you know, who knows what the impact really is on them. We all believe there is a real impact, and I believe there is, and how that's going to play out in coming years. It's impossible to say that because there's more violence in the Hunger Games, then you're going to have more people shooting up elementary schools. But at the same time, if things do happen in greater and greater with greater and greater frequency in a culture at the same time, then it's not foolish to at least hypothesize that there could be some sort of link. The biggest question of all is, how good is this for us? If a story really is a violent story, then to portray it on screen in some kind of syrupy, guarded way may not be the best way to be true to that piece of art. But it needs to be protected for the kind of person and mind and at least age that can understand that and that can fit that into a framework where you've got a story like Gone Girl, which is a novel that has been very highly acclaimed as a brilliant piece of work. And the film portrayed a violent act in there in a very violent way. But it was also R-rated. And everybody knows what that rating means. And parents know what that rating means. And while it doesn't mean that no 13-year-olds were able to get into Gone Girl, it at least gives us a cultural boundary. But if you start moving violence like that down into PG-13, or violence that's in PG-13 that may just be on the edge of it, between it and R, and you move that down into PG, you begin to have some real questions about what the film industry is doing within our culture. And that would be the way I would see that. I think you're right, though, Neil, that it is getting worse, that Hunger Games is a good example for a PG-rated movie. I think it was PG-rated. I'm sorry. I don't have that information right at my fingertips. Maybe you can check that somehow. But PG or PG-13, it pushed the edges further than the earlier films had.
Yeah.
And I think they needed to put some more action or some more emotionally charged, material into it, because they had strung out the plot, which in the last book, as a single book, was very well paced and really a great story that wouldn't have needed a whole lot of violence. But they've departed from the story pretty strongly anyway, so I'm kind of interested to see the fourth one, to see what's going to happen.
Well, it is, and I'm sure as an author, and no matter what the story might be, when you're when it goes to film, I mean, you know, they can't get it all in a couple hours, and you'd like to have some sort of influence. And but we'll talk more about that. Maybe do authors have influence? So when those movie rights get sold, and we'll get to that and more, and tackle some more of the issues we're talking about. What's going on in the world of film and Hollywood today. Drew Trotter writes on film and culture, has been doing that for a number of years. He serves as the executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers and has used the world of film as an opportunity for great conversations on spiritual things as well. He does a seminar called Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly. We'll maybe touch on that again. Get to a few others that we want to talk about. I had a question about Interstellar. We'll get Drew's perspective on that. Maybe a little bit about maybe some of the political pressure that comes to some of the movies now. If you'd like to join the conversation as well, you can call us at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And we'll be back in just a moment. Time to get the popcorn, huh? Right? So
that's I always think of Star Wars when I hear this.
Oh, that's true. Yes,
that's me.
There is kind of that, a little bit of that, but hey, you can't actually watch a movie hardly anymore without seeing that. So,
right.
We're talking movies today, as we love to do. Drew Trotter joining us again. Drew, not only a cultural critic, film reviewer, writes on film and pop culture. He's also a theologian and serves as executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers, which is a great consortium of outreaches across university campuses across the United States. And they have a great great work that they're doing there. But, Drew, we're talking a little bit about some of the films. So one of our regular callers, Frank, wanted to get some of your comment on the movie Interstellar. What's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, that's a production of Christopher Nolan, written and directed by him and his brother Jonathan. Nolan, of course, is a darling of Hollywood in some ways. He's never won any awards, but his movies have always done well. And this was a take on the idea of the Earth wasting away and humanity looking to space again. And the main character, Matthew McConaughey, finds a way to save humanity. Not surprising, but it's a unique way as well. And ultimately, the idea of McConaughey looking out there to, and this was never really defined, but his idea seems to be that either there are aliens out there or perhaps even God out there in the universe that could save us somehow. The way the movie ultimately moves is that the they out there is actually we, and that human beings discover a way to go into a multidimensional state where time and space are collapsed. And in a very, very interesting and moving scene, the McConaughey character interacts with his daughter on Earth at the same time as the daughter is virtually his age, because he's gone into space and lost all these years, or gained all these years, however you want to look at it. And it's kind of complicated, but the point is this, that humanity saves itself, and it saves itself by being essentially a Gnostic kind of element in the universe that collapses space and time and is a being that can transcend that. And humanity supposedly learns how to do that. Well, that's got real problems theologically, as you might expect. If you're even familiar with the word Gnostic, it means it was an early form of Christianity that so emphasized the spiritual that the physical became actually bad or evil. And that's not the way God created us. He created us as body souls, that the soul is good, but the body is good as well. And he created everything in those glorious verses in Genesis, and he saw that it was good, including the physical universe. And Interstellar, I think, fails in that regard. But I liked the movie very much. It could have done without the last act in which a famous movie star has a role that surprises everybody because it's not ever advertised that he's actually in the movie. And the whole section, that whole section just seems to be added on and get in the way of this very fine story that has done a good job of keeping a good pace until then. So it's overlong, but overall, the movie is really interesting. McConaughey does a great job. Jessica Chastain is very good, and some of the other actors are good as well. It's hard for me to buy Anne Hathaway as a serious, you know, physics guru kind of person, as good an actress as I think she is. But nevertheless, that's my take on Interstellar.
You know, you mentioned that. I think we've talked about that before, but that's sort of Hollywood's oftentimes theology, right, is that we pull ourselves, the they are we, that we fix ourselves, we save ourselves, no matter what the storyline is.
I think in the American public sphere of the public intellectuals who either write in the op-ed pieces in newspapers, or they write in the Atlantic Monthly or whatever other magazines, the novelists, the university professors, if you can characterize them, and I think it's kind of problematic to just say one size fits all for any group of people, but the vast majority of them, are humanists. They really do believe that if there is an answer in the universe, it has got to be man. And I think that's really true in Hollywood. I think it is regularly stated that way in movie after movie, actually, that our salvation is going to come from us and nowhere else. And I think that's very sad because, at least I know in my own life, I never could have made it without knowing that God really did exist and that he had shown himself to us in Jesus Christ. And it pains me whenever anybody doesn't know that, because it seems to me not anything that I earned. In fact, I know it was not anything that I earned, this knowledge, and a knowledge that we wish everybody had. But people seem to regularly reject it.
Brings up maybe the new movie coming out here this Christmas from Angela Jolie, right? Unbroken, the Louis Zamperini story. I mean, he was one of those guys who tried to do it on his own. And we don't know, I guess, what sort of faith story will be in this new film. But obviously, it is he had a dynamic faith.
Well, I know enough to be sad about Unbroken. I look forward to it. I think it's going to be great. The Zamperini story is one of the great conversion stories of the 20th century, and he was a remarkable, remarkable man who accomplished so much by pulling himself up by his bootstraps and yet came to the point in his life where he simply couldn't do it, and he knew he couldn't, and he turned to Christ and found a redemption that lasted him right through his 90-plus years as a human being. And that is not going to be portrayed in this movie. Apparently, there is a placard at the end that says that he went to a Billy Graham crusade, in fact, and turned his life over to Christ, and that made some kind of difference. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie. I don't know. It doesn't come out until Christmas Day in wide release. I don't know how much of the pre-story to that story is told, whether you see him praying or making his promise to God that if he gets him through this, you know, he'll turn his life over to him or whatever. But I know that they don't take it all the way to that point of faith and see that as somehow the resolution. I'm not sure that it would work very well. Some things just don't work well in movies. You know, Neil, and I'm not so sure conversion works all that well in movies. It is real to us, and it is the total change of our lives, but that's almost entirely interior. We know the change in our own hearts. We know the change in our own minds and in the way we see the world, and it seems like night and day to us. It's the most important thing in the world to us, but movies can only look on the outside. And you can be much more convincing about the psychology of a human being or the internal workings of a human being in a novel than you can in a film, because a film is so much more concrete. It's always been a problem for filmmakers. How do you actually portray what's going on in someone's head? And it's a great conundrum and never has been solved. Or very, very rarely, if ever. I'm not sure I can think of a movie off the top of my head where I really think the psychology of a person has been fully explored, especially as well as a book. And I worry that Unbroken, some of us are going to want to see that because of the story that we've read, that Lauren Hillenbrand did such a great job of bringing to us in words. I don't think we'll have the same feeling in pictures, which doesn't mean that it won't be a great, inspiring movie. It might be wonderful.
And maybe send a few people to find the book and read the story. And
exactly. Yeah. That's true. That is true.
You know, that film getting a little pushback in Japan a bit. You know, there's been political pressure from North Korea about, a comedy coming out. I know that there's a movie on Martin Luther King coming out. Talk a little about that, sort of the political maybe pressure in movies, that's kind of changed a little bit than from what it used to be.
Yeah, I think that's true. In the 70s, there were a lot of movies, 60s and 70s, there were a lot of movies pushing social boundaries, pushing political boundaries even. especially surrounding the war in Vietnam. There were a number of movies, you know, just very strongly criticizing the war in Vietnam or very strongly promoting it. You know, famous movie that John Wayne had so much to do with, The Green Berets. And, you know, war movies often go back and forth in that regard. They either promote a very patriotic America or they really strongly criticize America and its place in the world. So that happens a lot. With these two movies, I think The Interview, which is the James Franco, Seth Rogen movie that you were talking about, is a pure comedy. They just think it's just something worth making hilarious. But I don't think that the North Koreans, who are portrayed as a bunch of bozos in the movie, apparently, are particularly enamored of being portrayed that way on screen. And you get this all the time in China. In fact, China has got regulations on how many Western movies it will even allow to come into its country every year, because they realize the overall cultural effect of movies is regularly to see a lifestyle on screen or to see a way of living on screen and certain freedoms being exercised that we take for granted. We don't even see them in the movie, but the Chinese do and long for that. And so China long ago limited the number of Western movies it would even allow to come into the country, and even those are very strongly vetted and sometimes even reshot in different ways, so that they'll be acceptable to a huge audience that Hollywood would like to have. So you've got that. You've also got internal social politics still talked about regularly and has been for several years now, and that's race relations. Last year's Academy Award winner was 12 Years a Slave, and very strongly in a using the historical atmosphere of slavery in the South, you know, was trying to critique the way races relate to each other in the 21st century in a very strong way. Well, much closer to home is a movie coming out this Christmas about Martin Luther King and the March on Selma, and it will you know, raise some of these issues again. Sometimes they try to do this and it doesn't seem to work. There was an interesting film last year that a lot of people liked, and it got good buzz when it came out in the summer, called The Butler, with Forrest Whitaker playing a butler who worked in the White House over many administrations, and the change in his life over the years and all that. But the movie, though it did okay at the box office, got no Academy recognition, and they just didn't seem to care about what it was saying about American life. We'll see if Selma does better. Coming out on Christmas Day shouldn't hurt.
Which brings up, before we take a break, I guess maybe just some reaction. Do movies still have an influential role in shaping society? I mean, would you say it's more or less than maybe what it's been?
Boy, that is a really great question, because the movie industry has been thrown into a tizzy for a number of years by a number of things. Streaming, DVDs, the rise in the incredible rise in the quality of movies and movie-like forms that you can see on television with these mini series and that sort of thing, like True Detective last year on HBO, eight hour-long episodes. Can't do an eight-hour movie and show it in the theaters. You have to pay money to go to the theaters. And the other way, you can just turn on your television. Big screen TVs with sound systems in people's homes are mimicking the theater experience more and more and more. So there's a real question whether theater-going movies, in other words, going to the theater, is having anything like the cultural influence it used to have. But they're still making movies that are being shown on these television sets, or that are being streamed or watched in on DVD, and probably by more people because of that. So it's a very difficult question to answer. You could certainly say, I think, that more powerful even than music, and music is an extremely powerful medium, that if you combine television and movies, as one visual medium, that you've got the most powerful agent, I think, culturally in the world today, more powerful than the print, the printed word even, as strong as that impact is and remains in our culture. Everybody thought novels were dead when movies became big, and they never have died. They've just gotten bigger. So it's an impossible thing to measure, of course, so you can endlessly debate it. But in my opinion, you still have a lot more people quoting movies and watching movies on DVD and watching movies on streaming and on demand and all of that than you do just about anything else that will really have an impact on the culture, that is about serious subjects and deals with them in depth.
Well, we're taking a look at some of the films, the new movies that are coming out and some that have been out and the impact that they've had on us and our culture. Drew Trotter today. Drew is a film and pop culture critic. Has written in publications such as Books and Culture, Christianity Today, and Critique, and also in the field of biblical studies. He's published Interpreting the Epistles to the Hebrews. He's done a seminar over the years called Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly. He's executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. And we'll get a couple more minutes with Drew here before time is gone. Invite you to stay tuned here on Connecting Faith.
You can find those old Beatles songs.
Sure.
Act Naturally, little Ringo.
You get your 15 minutes of fame there, or your million hits, whatever. We're talking movies, a big screen presentation. Drew Trotter, executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. He's been a film and pop culture critic for a number of years, and we've had him on many times and always enjoy our conversations. Drew, we're just talking about the influence of film and television. Independent films are really kind of making a difference too, aren't they, in terms of people are doing their own movies. They're doing it not in Hollywood.
They really continue to be influential, and they're populated by big stars quite often. I mean, Bill Murray did a movie called Saint Vincent, actually, come to think of it, with at least a reference to the Christian faith, and a serious one, actually, if you go to the film and see it. But stars like that are in these movies regularly. But one of my favorites this year was a movie called Calvary, an Irish film with a great actor named Brendan Gleeson, who actually helped shape the film with John Michael McDonough, who was the writer and director. And they're good friends, and they had worked together on a movie called The Guard. And this movie has as its central character an Irish priest. A priest who had, as a businessman, lived a pretty decadent life and then became a Christian and then sensed a calling into the priesthood and has an understanding of the people that he's ministering to in this small town in Ireland. And he faces a very, very difficult choice that is given to him in the opening frames of the movie because he's told he's going to be killed by one of his parishioners. In other words, the parishioner says, I'm going to kill you, Father, and I'm going to tell you where and when. And the whole question will be whether the priest is willing to show up or not, and then whether the guy is willing to do it or not, or woman, or whatever. And it's hard to describe. It's so interesting how you get an insight into a small town life in Ireland, but the hopelessness of the people and the hope that he tries to bring into their lives in Christ. And then the choices that he has to face. So powerful movie, very intense scene at the end, a lot of language, a lot of beer drinking and stuff in Irish pubs and all that. But it really is a movie that sparks a lot of thought and I would think a lot of conversation.
Well, probably we only have a couple minutes left here, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of thought given to some of the comedies today. I don't know if you have any. I'm just thinking about that. You were mentioning the Interview, kind of fun movie, but it seems like some of the comedies, I mean, they're not really all that funny anymore, just getting kind of rude.
Well, the Farrelly brothers had that influence with the so-called gross-out comedy, now 10 or 15 years old, and it just, it's, you know, you can only do so many jokes about bodily fluids and stuff. And I agree with you. I've been to several this year just to go. There was a remake of Dumb and Dumber with Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, who are both great actors and have a good chemistry between them. The Farrelly brothers directed it. It was called Dumb and Dumber 2. And, of course, they misspelled T-W-O into T-O. But it just wasn't very funny. I mean, they just did the same things over and over again. And there's not a lot of really creative wordsmithing going on in comedies anymore. They're depending upon visual jokes, and they're depending way too much on jokes that are about the body and about sex or about whatever. And again, there are only so many things that are really funny about those things. They're just crude, or they're not funny and they're not even crude. So it's too bad. You go back to the 30s and 40s, which was many people call the golden age of Hollywood. Well, it was the golden age of comedies as well. And you get somebody like Frank Capra doing a movie like It's a Wonderful Life, and Jimmy Stewart must have 20 different sayings in that movie that are just hilarious. But they don't. There was a lot of thought put into those. There was a lot of work put into them, and they're not doing that anymore. They're just relying on what they think can bring a young kid, to yuck it up a little bit. And it's not been. I can't say they haven't been successful. The Hangover and The Hangover 2 and The Hangover 3 have all been very successful movies. But for adults, I just don't think they're usually very funny.
Well, we probably that wasn't the right note to end on, probably. But it was more than fun and great to connect with you, Drew, once again. We so appreciate you taking some time with us today.
Thank you, Neil. I always enjoy it.
Drew Trotter, Executive Director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers, writes on film and pop culture, and joining us today here in Connecting Faith. We do want to just take a moment before our time is gone. We're in the midst of our Angel Tree campaign, and we've had so many wonderful responses. Grateful for the over 590 kids already taken care of, thanks to your generosity. $84 will help reach 6 children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. And we've been sharing with you each day stories of those that have been impacted by it. Here's a powerful story about Shakira.
In prisons all over the country, in late summer or early fall, prison chaplains encourage inmates to sign their children up for Angel Tree. Volunteers, like Arlene, call the legal guardians of those kids so that those children get just the right gift. It's a system that works, almost every time.
Last year, I spoke to a grandmother who was my contact person for 3 children, and I wanted to know what the children needed in terms of clothing and a fun item. And she gave me the information for the first child, and then when I asked for the information for the second child, there was such a long pause, and I said, "Are you still there?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, what does Shakira need this year, and what size is she?" And she said, "Shakira doesn't need anything this year." And I said, "Oh, my goodness, no, we really would like to provide for her." And she said, "Shakira won't need Christmas this year because she was murdered a couple of weeks ago with a shotgun blast to her stomach."
For Arlene, forever, Shakira will be a reminder that every single child counts. And Angel Tree is a privilege, a blessing, and an urgent rescue mission.
Then I realized the urgency of meeting the needs of these children that we're blessed to have and that we may only have one chance. Then I think about this year as we take on another 200 kids and how many of them are on the edge and that might not make it. And I challenge you to rescue just one of them and pull them back from that edge.
Well, I want to encourage you to do what you can. Thank you for your generosity to this wonderful outreach. 2.7 million children have an incarcerated parent in our nation. It's a sad statistic. But $84 will reach 6 children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. You can be a part of it. whether it's $84 or you can do $100 or $50 or $5, whatever you can do. Thank you for being a part of our Angel Tree opportunity. You can make this, you can go right to our website at myfaithradio.com and make your gift there, or you can call this toll-free number, 855-59-ANGEL. That's 855-592-6435. Thank you in advance for your generosity in helping in this important ministry outreach.
It's pretty exciting. Our update up to about 600 kids so far we have sponsored.
Super.
And
that's
we just
wonderful.
Need 400 more to make our goals. So please be a part of our ministry. That'd
Thank you for doing it, your generosity. By the way, if you missed part of today's program, want to hear it again or pass it on to a friend, you can always go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page. Thanks, and we'll talk tomorrow.